For decades, a quantum computer has been just around the corner. So where is it?
If you'd asked me very early on, I would have been very pessimistic.
The race to build a quantum computer...
Then I got more pessimistic.
Can anyone actually do it?
And more pessimistic.
One of the biggest tech stories on Earth. I'm Jacinta Bowler. Search for Science Friction, Dead and Alive, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it's The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford.
We're signalling across the cities in the dark, where we all move about like blood through the chambers of the heart. You're not like anyone I've met. You're not like anyone I've seen. And if I don't know you in my days, maybe, then I'll see you in my dreams. Oh, there must be somewhere we can go, somewhere my heart will not succumb. I wanna hear it in my voice, feel it in my lungs.
Later on today's show, The Veils frontman Finn Andrews is joining us. The Veils have a new album and a set of Australian tour dates, and we'll be talking with Finn about love and death and Sinead O'Connor. Now, I imagine most Australians don't really know the meaning of the word winter, but Anna Maria Freeman and Arve Henriksen are Norwegian, so they do. They're in Australia working with the Australian Chamber Orchestra on a program called From Winter's Stillness. Anna is here as one third of the vocal ensemble Trio Medieval, and Arve, who is her husband, is a jazz trumpeter and a fairly unusual one at that. The program for the ACO features lots of Scandinavian music and general Nordic music, and a new piece from the award-winning Icelandic composer Hildur Guðnadóttir. You probably have heard her music in the miniseries Chernobyl or the film Joker. We talked to her, in fact, a couple of years ago when she wrote the score for Kenneth Branagh's film A Haunting in Venice. We'll speak to Anna and Arve in a moment, but let's begin with a song. This is from Trio Medieval. It's a folk song, and it's called De Lisle Bonne, The Little Child.
So do my raven.
That's Dilly's Le Bonnet, The Little Child, and it was performed on that album, Folk Songs, by Trio Medieval. And Trio Medieval consists of Joran Luvisa Husan, Dieter Marie Brein, and Anna Maria Freeman, who joins me in the Music Show studio, along with the jazz trumpeter Arve Henriksen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Let's talk about your own vocal upbringing. How did you end up where you are?
I was a violinist to start with. I started to play in Suzuki when I was 4 years old. I really enjoyed that, and a lot of the repertoire there was Baroque music, and that really triggered me. I didn't actually sing until I was maybe 19 years old, when a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to join a jazz quartet, and they lacked a second alto in that quartet, and it wasn't at all my vocal range, but I thought it was a lovely thing to do, to make music with other people. But that brought me into starting practicing my voice, and then after a while I went to Oslo to study there, and very, very luckily met Linn Andrea, who started the Trio Medieval in 1997, and also another singer called Torun Østrem Åsum. And we created the Trio Medieval, and it's been going on now. We are almost starting our 30th year. It's insane. But have always really, really enjoyed to make music with other people. For example, what we are doing now with the orchestra, it's something that we don't do so much of. So it's a very wonderful thing for us to just be a part of something that is much larger than ourselves.
Trio Medieval sings, as the title suggests, medieval music, but as yes, we have also just heard, folk music and contemporary music. And that's essentially the diet, isn't it?
Absolutely. When we started the group, it was very focused on the medieval music, and it triggered us because it was a very specific sound to that kind of music, and not very many people did it at that time. And there were not so many vocal groups as there are now either. So the music has this wonderful, intimate sound. So it's very, in a way, meditative, but also has a very strong feel to it because of the open chords, and you can sing it very pure, mainly because you want to tune it, so you don't use so much vibrato. And it was the medieval music that was the first repertoire that we really, really wanted to focus on. And that led us into also medieval ballads, Nordic ballads, that we started to incorporate in the repertoire. Then we, very early in 1998, we decided to go to summer school in Cambridge, which was led by the Hilliard Ensemble. And that was just the most amazing thing for us. And they encouraged us a lot. And what was exciting also there was they always invited composers to join their summer schools. And that year, Paul Robinson came there and gave us a contemporary piece. And we thought, okay, we have to do this. Yeah, we had to bring one contemporary piece, and we brought the shortest piece we could find. But actually, there were a few composers there at the course, and we got excited about putting medieval music to do the contrast with the contemporary music, actually very much like the Hilliard Ensemble had done for many, many years. Then gradually we built up the repertoire, and I mean, we were very lucky because composers like Ivan Moody and Gavin Bryars and Sun Ji Hong, Andrew Smith, we suddenly had quite a large repertoire of contemporary music.
It's interesting, you know, that you mentioned the Hilliard Ensemble, because immediately this little light bulb goes off and I'm thinking, Norwegian jazz, because here is this famous collaboration that they did with Jan Garbarek, and you have sitting there in the studio with you a Norwegian jazz musician who sometimes collaborates with you.
Absolutely.
Arve, can I ask you about what you do when you play with Trio Medieval?
I want to blend my trumpet with the voices, and that is maybe the main task for me and the biggest challenge in the beginning. Now, after all these years that we've been collaborating, I feel that my trumpet sound is like the fourth voice of the ensemble, and I can blend much better than I did in the beginning. The Younger Barak and the Hilliards has been quite inspiring for me as well. And listening to that and the blending that I'm trying to do is a bit different maybe than what Younger Barak is doing. Like Manfred Aisha said, I can come out like a silver fish together with the voices and blend in a different way. The saxophone of Younger Barak has a fantastic, unique tone. So there are differences the way I look at it and listen to it.
Yes, he tends to sort of sit on top of the ensemble, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he does. In those recordings.
Yeah. Exactly,
The sound of your trumpet is quite beguiling, and it's important, isn't it, to you? I think it's something that you've worked on quite a lot. And one of the things you seem to take great pleasure in doing is trying not to sound like a trumpet.
Yeah, but I'm trying just to use the different colors that instrument can bring out. The trumpet teaching worldwide is very much stuck in the classical way of teaching. And I think the trumpet, it's just a tool for making music, as all the instruments are. So I think for me, it was very early quite important to make this instrument sound like my voice, actually. That's what you can hear from any instrumentalists when they've been playing for some time, is that they're getting more and more closer to their own human voice and the singing they do. So, of course, inspiration from earlier on, shakuhachi and the duduk from Armenia, Norwegian folk singers, all kinds of sounds, actually, because I think it's fantastic to orchestrate trumpet instead of playing trumpet.
Yes. Maybe we could talk about your album, Mental Fatigue, which came out in 2021 when a lot of people were experiencing mental fatigue. Again, this is a good example, I think. If we listen to Acceptance, for instance, here's a wonderful example of you creating actually quite a duduk sort of sound.
I used also some electronics in there, which I tried to make as organic as possible. But the Acceptance piece, which we also will perform together with the ACO on this tour, it has this type of duduk storytelling ID behind it and around it.
Acceptance, the trumpet of Arve Henriksen there, and he is my guest on today's music show, along with Anna Maria Freeman from Trio Medieval, and they are both of them and the other members of Trio Medieval collaborating with the Australian Chamber Orchestra. Maybe I could ask you, Anna, about this new piece that Hilda Guðnadóttir has written for you. How is that coming along?
It's coming along well, we think. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece and quite a different vocal range for us because we all sing in the lower part of our registers for this piece. It's a different kind of sound experience, I think, to listen to the trio in this piece than from the Tonio Kurwitz piece, for example, that we also will perform on this tour. And then, of course, it's the beautiful Icelandic language that we are working on to present in the very best way we can. She's also a musician and she performs a lot herself. So she's very much a part of the feel, of the performance feel to the piece.
You mentioned earlier, Anna, that you are obviously classically trained, but the repertoire that you perform, the medieval repertoire and the contemporary repertoire, you know, that leaves a sort of 600-year gap in the middle.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether these two repertoires join up in a way, whether you find that the kind of vocal techniques that you need for singing medieval music are not unlike the kind of sound that you want to make in a lot of contemporary music.
Yes, none of us were brought up as folk musicians in the trio, but folk music is close to our hearts in the Nordic countries, and we have been inspired by colleagues and listening a lot to folk music and try to, to use the music but sing it with the voices that we have. So we are not sort of traditionally trained, but we use the music to make the arrangements in three parts, for example, like Tone Kron did with the Lislebornet that we have heard. It's become much more frequent to do that now in the Nordic countries, to arrange the folk music, but originally it was much more performed by just one person. Or the songs can also be based on Hardanger fiddle tunes, and then you make sounds like da di dum di daddle dum di doodle di do or something. You just use different kinds of syllables to emphasize the bowing of the Hardanger fiddle or something like that. But we feel that really that the early music and the contemporary music connects. And of course, the composers who have written for the trio have been very inspired by also the way that we sing the medieval music. So the contemporary pieces, also the texts that we use for the contemporary music. So it's not very, very advanced contemporary music in the way that contemporary music can be. We sing more sort of melodious and minimalistic contemporary music. That's how I would sort of explain it. Yeah.
And the ACO's publicity talks about ethereal beauty from Europe's frozen north. And, you know, well, because publicists have to write something. But there is a kind of exoticism, I suppose, that Australians feel for the Nordic countries. And there is a tendency to kind of assume it's all one thing, the music that comes from the Nordic countries. But I wonder whether you, coming from there, are aware of anything at all which kind of unites the Nordic sound, including in jazz, because there's been a lot of good jazz come out of Norway in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, what to answer to that question? I mean, there, how I listen and look at it is that from Norway's point of view and a Scandinavian point of view, I think when we perform music, and the genres is something that someone else has been adding to it. And I think also the special thing that I've discovered is maybe a little bit different than other countries is that in mostly in Norway, where I've been performing in my earlier days, the collaboration between different genres were just a daily thing. One day I could play with some folk musicians, and then the next day with jazz musicians, the next day with the chamber orchestra or whatever. People are mingling around, and that creates also like a very nice way of exchanging ideas, exchanging sounds, and we are able to sort of together create something. And I think this thing that we are creating music and art together without looking at the genres is fantastic way of evolving and building a music career together. Because I look at my career as a part of a bigger ensemble of a lot of colleagues that have been inspiring me. And without their ideas and music and sounds, I would not be able to evolve as I've been doing. And I think that is a very, you know, this Norwegian, Scandinavian type of flat structure that in a band that we're all equal and important. The colleagues that are constantly helping you to come further with your art. That is quite important for the Scandinavian approach to music, I would say.
Arve Henriksen, Anna Maria Freeman, thank you very much for being my guests on The Music Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Trio Medieval and Arve Henriksen with St. Magnus Hymn. That's the 13th century Orcadian song. Well, probably. Anyway, it's about an Orcadian saint, Magnus the Martyr, given a 21st century Norwegian feel. And if you know the music of Peter Maxwell Davis, you might know his hymn to St. Magnus. It's a 35-40 minute piece for chamber ensemble based on that little fragment of music from the Orkneys, medieval music in parallel thirds. You don't hear that very often. From Winter's Stillness with the Australian Chamber Orchestra, Trio Medieval and Arve Henriksen is on tour around Australia from the 25th of July to the 9th of August. You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. Finn Andrews is a British New Zealand musician who is the lead singer of The Vales. The Vales were signed to Rough Trade Records when Finn was merely 16 years old. They've since made 8 studio albums, so they're a significantly more mature band. And in a moment, we're going to be talking to a significantly more mature Finn. The new album is called Fragile World. No one's arguing with that. And this is a song called Aurora.
Falling back to earth, not far from the ground. Falling back to earth, so far from it now. Staring right at the sun, I'm laying in the light. No roads left to run, try as I might.
That's Aurora, and it's from the new album from The Vales, Fragile World, and great pleasure to welcome to The Music Show, Finn Andrews. Hello, Finn.
Hi, Andy.
You're always described as a British New Zealand musician, so I have to ask, which Aurora is this?
Well, this was very much a Kiwi one. We were sort of in the midst of a geomagnetic storm here on the day it was written. It was written and recorded in the same day. And all the newspapers had these pictures of these lovely, huge auroras on the front page. And yeah, it just sort of seeped in as it does.
What's that like? What do you get from coming up with a song and putting it down immediately and then that's it, it's done? I mean, it, apart from feeling slightly smug, presumably.
Yeah, it's a very rare occurrence for me. I have often laboured over these things for years. With the lyrics and the melodies, everything can take a very long time, but occasionally one comes to you very quickly. And yeah, I think I was probably feeling very smug that day. But it was a very rare, very rare event, as I say.
And where does this fit in terms of building an album? Because obviously it's the beginning of the album, so it sets the tone for what follows. But had the album already started in your mind, or was this in fact the start of it?
Yeah, it's a gradual process. I think you sort of you have many ideas coming going through your head at the same time. I had an original idea to sort of have this as a high concept record where the whole album sort of took place over the course of one day, with a sort of the beginning of the day and then the widening dark. And that was sort of where I was pushing it in the beginning, but it didn't seem to really want to go in that direction. I think it's sort of, I've learned over time, there's a very specific kind of shepherding you have to do with these records, where you kind of want to, you have to, yeah, you shepherd them along, but you don't want to get in the way too much. They kind of know where they want to go, all these songs, but it's a delicate balance doing that, trying to protect them and nurture them, but not get in the way. A lot like parenthood, actually, as I'm finding.
Yes, I know. So you have to listen then, don't you, a lot like parenthood, to the material as well as, you know, create it.
Yeah, it's a skill, I think, beyond, I mean, anything. It's been it is a lifetime's work trying to hear them properly and to be a good steward for them. Yeah, it doesn't come easy. You know, I've found each album, you learn a little more about it and you hear their voices a little clearer. But yes, it's a lifetime's work, I think, to really be able to do them justice.
Well, talking about the sound of the album, the piano is sort of the central instrument on this one, and it was on the last two. Mm. But if you go back further in Vale's history, it sounds much more like a guitar band. So perhaps you could talk about that change of focus and what that's meant maybe in terms of songwriting.
Yeah, I learned piano a lot later. My dad taught me some chords when I moved to London to sort of start the band. So I'd already been playing guitar for a few years. There's a lot of piano players in my family, my father obviously, and then his mother, and then like two of his uncles, and his great-grandfather as well, was like a pub pianist in London. So I think the piano comes to me with a lot of heavy familial baggage, shall we say, which at first made it sort of unappealing. But as I've gotten older, I think I've drifted more and more towards it. And I certainly write on it a lot more as the years go by. But I've enjoyed on this record sort of taking it to some places we haven't usually. There's a song called Little White Bird, which is this sort of quite electronic kind of, it's not a palette that you would necessarily expect a sort of a big grand piano to sort of arrive in. But I've been enjoying doing things like that with it, sort of taking it to some different places.
Oh, little white bird, save the fragile world. I see you in the night. You call when you like. Oh, little white bird, you save the fragile world. Oh, little white bird, you save the fragile world. You're clinging to life. You're singing so high. I'd make you my wife. You're married to the sky. Oh, little white bird. Oh, little white bird.
Do you find that it's changed the nature of the songs, that you spend more time sitting at a piano keyboard?
Yeah, I do. I think I understand it as an instrument. I've never felt really like a guitar player. I think I just started learning guitar as I wanted to hit something while I sang. I sort of needed to keep time somehow. I learned drums first, which are obviously great for hitting. And then it was like, okay, well, I'll sort of bash around on the guitar for a while. But the piano has a lot more of a history in my family, and I think a lot more in my subconscious too. And maybe perhaps I treat it with a bit more respect than I do the guitar. I've sort of come to it wanting to learn its ways.
Again, you have to listen, don't you?
You do, yeah. And it's in one way a very simple instrument. All the notes are already there in front of you. But I find it, yeah, a really fascinating instrument. And I keep learning so much about it every day.
You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford. I'm talking to Finn Andrews of The Vales, shortly to arrive on these shores. And we're talking about the new album, Fragile World, the title.
I think it began just as a fairly sort of on-the-nose reference to, yeah, the state of the world we're living in at the moment. I felt very overwhelmed by it in the last year. And I think songwriting, it kind of returned to its purest form for me. It felt a lot like it did when I was first writing songs in high school and just wanting to sort of retreat from everything around me and make my own little world away from everything. And then as the album took shape, I suppose I was thinking more about, oh, this is, you know, our eighth record now. And we had a song recently in a Spider-Man trailer, and people have been telling me about the Spider-Verse, and I was realizing I sort of think of The Vales more and more like that, as each record is this sort of gentle expansion on this, yeah, this world or universe that we've been creating for quite a while now. Yeah, and all the millions of little decisions you make to write and then record these things, this fragile little enterprise that I've been involved with for so long now, where all of these little decisions, you know, make up the larger whole. So yeah, I suppose it has both of those things going on, a sort of reference to the wider world around us, which feels just increasingly fragile and on the precipice. And yeah, and this little world also that I seem to spend all my time creating as a reaction against that, I suppose.
And does a title like this, or any title, dictate to some extent the contents of the album? I mean, did you have the title early enough for it to dictate the contents? Do you write to the title, in a sense?
I wish I could. Records for me are, it's chaos, it's complete chaos. All of my interior life is there, and, you know, it's a messy place to be in any human mind, and I feel like mine is perhaps a little messier than most. So I never really am able to make any sort of conscious decision about anything. I write every day. I end up with, you know, hundreds of these songs. I don't know what any of them mean, and I don't know what any of them, you know, should be, or how they should sound, really. It's all just coming out, and you're trying to kind of find your way through it. So, I mean, any decision really is made instinctively. You're just trying to listen through all the noise. Everyone has these sort of urges, don't they, to kind of want their music to be a certain way, or, you know, at my lowest ebb, perhaps, you know, you start thinking, oh, it'd be nice to have a hit record, or you know, maybe it could be this kind of thing. Maybe this could be really cool. I could make this a really trendy kind of record or something. And none of that ever matters, because it just, the songs are the way they are. And if you try and get involved, all you do is sort of poison the well, really. So I would love it. I would love it if I could sit down and just say, okay, well, this is going to be like this, and then make it that way. But it's a process of just of editing and, yeah, shepherding, more than anything else, for me at least. There's a small element of control that I think I've found over the years, but ultimately, I'm at the mercy of these things I write.
It sounds like you're taking dictation almost.
It is. It does feel like that. Yeah, it's, it's all in there, I suppose. It's all, I think, because it's such a digestive process for me, it is, you're just processing all of this, these big themes that I couldn't hope to ever be able to make any sense of in my day-to-day life. But songwriting has always been that for me, just a way to think and process generally love and death. You know, that seems to be the two things that I have trouble with and need to keep songs around to, try and help me make some sense of.
Yes, well, they've been the kind of driving forces of songwriting for hundreds of years.
Yeah, there's a lot of material there still, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure. Speaking of trying to kind of blot out the noise, you occasionally get pigeonholed, and sometimes you're called Southern Gothic, which suggests that you live in a big house with Nick Cave and a few other people. Is that all totally unhelpful as far as you're concerned, or do you see what the journalists mean?
I think there's been elements of that. I think we've darted around a lot over the years. There's been a lot of different sort of genres we've passed through. We made that record with LP, and there was a very different palette there to the records before. I'm just imagining what it would be like to have Nick Cave as a flatmate. I don't know how, yeah. Great songwriter, but I don't know if I want to live with him.
I think it'd be a haunted house.
Yeah. I think, he was a great influence, particularly when I was younger and growing up in New Zealand, and there weren't many songwriters around in Australasia that I really sort of aspired to be. So I think, yeah, he was a big one when I was younger for sure. And also I guess a lot of the songwriters that inspired him are probably the same as well. I was always a huge Leonard Cohen fan and Johnny Cash and these sorts of people. But I think this restlessness, this sort of chaos that I'm talking about, I guess it does mean it gets a bit genre bendy at times, because I've never felt really entirely at home in any one place. And I think the excitement for me still comes from the movement and the freedom between moving between these different worlds.
Nick Cave, Leonard Cohen, Johnny Cash, all have incredibly distinctive voices, and so do you. And talking about the sound of the Vales, we were talking about the piano, but in a way, the sound of the Vales is your voice, isn't it? Are you aware of that? You must be, because you have to listen to it a lot. You listen back to it, but when you sing, is it like talking and you don't hear your own voice? You just get the song out.
Yeah, I think I had that miraculous thing happen in the last perhaps 3 years where I did feel like I did find my voice. People always talk about finding your voice. I'd always felt a little ashamed that I'd never felt like I'd reached that point. I certainly had no natural talent with it, and it took me a long time to learn to sing. And but in the last few years, I feel a lot more at home with it, and I feel like I've made a friend of it, whereas it did feel like an adversary for a long time, and used to just sort of cover it in reverb and hope for the best and try not to listen to it if I could possibly avoid it. Whereas now, I do, yeah, it feels like a big part of me and something I've worked very hard to sort of make my own. But also, I think now I've got to that point, I kind of like treating it differently and trying to make it into someone else, having these different sort of characters that I take on sometimes with it. And certainly in the live setting, I enjoy that side of it. I enjoy yeah, the variety of things you can kind of make people feel just with this one instrument, it can be such an intense thing and such a sort of gentle thing at the same time.
Yes. How did you know you'd found it?
It's just been, yeah, a gradual process, I think. I think it was really probably just no longer feeling so pained by it when you're recording. And, you know, I sort of felt like, okay, you know, that's as good as I could have done. And it sounds like me, I guess. It's a really great point to have gotten to. I think it's given me a little more confidence to make these records a lot faster as well. Like, we used to labor over them for so long, whereas this is our second record within a year and a half. And so I can work a lot faster. We record a lot faster. We do it all live. Like, all of these vocals are just start to finish live, and it just makes it so much quicker. I just focus on getting the performance and, you know, don't just sit there laboring over them as much as I used to.
And what about putting your voice at the service of somebody else's songs? Because you don't cover songs very often, but there's a Sinead O'Connor song on this new album.
Yeah, she sort of crept in. We haven't had a cover on a record before, but I just loved that song. And I've been playing a lot more cover versions as well. Maybe that does come from that sort of, feeling slightly more at home with my own voice. But I'm glad to have gotten to this place. And it's been a hard-earned confidence, but there's a little bit of it now.
I think this leads us to high hopes, don't you?
Mm, very nice.
What are yours?
What are my high hopes? Well, they rest almost entirely in my children now, I think.
You've got a new one?
Yeah, we have a new little boy. He's only a month old now. And my daughter, who's nearly four. They've just reconfigured my world in so many ways. And this song... it's certainly about that. The last verse, I remember writing this song with my daughter playing literally under the piano while I was writing it. And she's seeped through into this record quite a lot, yeah. I think.
All the more reason to use the piano, I think, if you can have your daughter play underneath it while you work.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing.
Finn, thank you very much. Very good to talk to you.
Lovely speaking with you, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Well, in my darkest hours, yeah, when I feel I've got nothing, I feel the hands of time at my throat. Yeah, I know we're all looking for something, a little meat on the thigh bone, a little sugar lump in my throat, a bit of something from nothing. Oh, well, I never had high hopes. Oh, my love, my love, my love, my love. Oh, my love, my love, my love, my love. Oh, my love, my love, my love, my love. Oh, my love, my love, my love, my love. I look on you like the ocean. You're what I'd fill the world up with, my little lamb of devotion. Well, now there's nothing that I wouldn't give to you. Oh, well, I never had high hopes. Oh, well, I never had high hopes. Thank you. Now I lie awake in the dark. Oh, my love, my love, my love, my love. Oh, my.
High Hopes, that's The Vales, and Finn Andrews was my guest. The Vales are in Sydney and Melbourne on the 20th and 21st of August, and the new album is called Fragile World. And the world may be fragile, but the music show marches on. Next time, the latest in our series, Music Now and Then, and we will be speaking to the composer Lisa Lim. She has a new production of her opera, The Oresteia, coming to the stage in Sydney, and we'll sit down for a chat about her music now and then.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.